This is a weekly podcast to update you on the volcanic activity of the week. I'm one of your hosts, Alessandro Musu.
And I'm your other host, Corinne Jorgensen. We're PhD students at the University of Geneva.
We study volcanoes and are here to give you all the hot volcano news.
First, a quick update on the volcanic activity of the past week.
And then, the focus of the day, that is going to be Mama Henna.
You guys must think we are obsessed with Mauna, which maybe we are, but we're also currently literally on Mount Etna as we record this.
Yeah, we are sitting on some ashes, watching Saudi's crater, puffing some steam, and recording the podcast. So we are so amazed by this wonderful volcano. So a focus on Mama Etna, recorded on Mama Etna, was compulsory for today, and we are here hoping for an eruption.
We'll be interviewing one of our colleagues today, Valentin, and talking a little bit about his research. So stay tuned for that.
Okay, Corinne, but first, the worldwide news.
So let's start. It's September 29th at the time of record, and here are your quick updates.
In Europe, let's start with a quick recap on La Palma's last week's activity.
And the news is that Corinne is going to fly there next week. So we might have a live episode on La Palma, Corinne.
Yeah, let's see. Hopefully my flight doesn't get cancelled because of ash, but fingers crossed. Anyway, so La Palma in the Canary Islands, which started erupting just about 2 weeks ago, after a month of seismic swarms picking up. When we last left off last week, the lava flows were moving down the slopes trying to reach the sea, and there was one fissure and then another one opened the morning we recorded the podcast on September 21st. The lava flows were then slowing down, but still crossing into the town of Toduque and unfortunately destroying it.
According to the 22nd of September update on VolcanoDiscovery.com, the lava flow field covered an area larger than 1.5 square kilometers. By September 21st. Always on the 22nd, two more fissures opened, and the activity focused mostly on the new fissure located near Tecade.
On the 23rd, the eruption started to give us a little bit more ash, with ash plumes reaching about as high as 4 kilometers. Though we've had some pretty impressive lava fountaining activity, where we've had lava fountains up to 1 kilometer in height, as well as ash plumes and lava flows. These big explosions are also accompanied by this ejection of bombs, which have been reaching about 1 kilometer far. And so a bomb in this case is not like a classic bomb. It's large chunks of lava, of rock that fly through the air and go quite far in some cases.
Yeah. So this explosion increase on September 24th with the production of loud detonation with shockwaves. You will certainly find several amazing videos of this explosion on internet.
Some of these are really incredible. And on the 24th, actually, there was a new vent which opened on the active cone flank.
The advancing lava flow, as reported in several videos, destroyed sadly land, structures, and buildings.
On September 25th, a big portion of the western flank collapsed, and the eruption was then continued steadily. And then the next days, it paused.
And we think he stopped when Holly and Corinne decided to go there with our Professor Luca. Because we are Volk Blasters, and any volcano we fly to stop erupting. We are here on Etna now, and just him and we, nothing more.
Okay, anyways, the eruption paused for a little bit, but then renewed again on September 27th with huge lava fountains and several active vents aligned east-west, cutting the main cone.
That reminds me a little bit, Mama Etna. Do you remember, Corinne, when we had this huge fun eruption? I know that we are talking about La Palma.
Anyways, on the 28th, the flow has eventually reached the ocean, and that's where we'll leave off for now until next week.
So, let's fly to Asia. Asia this week was a bit quiet. We had several ash plumes as usual from Suanozejima, Sakurajima, Langila, and Karimsky.
In the Americas, we had a few exciting things from Alaska this week. Semipochnoi had explosions that were happening about every hour with plumes reaching about 3 to 4 kilometers in height. The alert level was red last week, but since then, later this week, the activity has started to decrease, and now the alert level has been lowered to orange on September 21st. Alaska also had an eruption from Nova Rupta, which is a new volcano for me. It's the first time I've heard of it, with an ash plume that reached 1.5 kilometers in height on September 25th.
Moving south, the classy highest plume competition. As always, the winner is Sabakaya with a plume of 7.9 kilometers on September 21st. There were also several other eruptions with tall plume, including Popocatépetl, Nevado de Ruy, Reventador, and Sangay.
You know, Kerensky actually tied with Sabakaya for that global tallest plume.
Yeah. Kerensky produced a 7.9 high plume. Same level, Sabankaya.
They're tied. Okay, so this week, Fuego was also a bit busy. There were reports of pyroclastic flows over the Senzia, I hope I said that correctly, I'm sorry if I didn't, ravine, which reached 4 to 6 kilometers from the crater. Pyroclastic flows, to remind you, are hot flows of ash, debris, and rock fragments, which can travel incredibly fast, up to 200 kilometers per hour. We also saw this week at Fuego lava flows through both the Senzia and Trinidad ravines. On September 27th, the Guatemalan National Institution for Seismology, Volcanology, Meteorology, and Hydrology reported a big decrease in activity since September 24th, and the lava flows seemed to be having stopped and the volcanic tremors decreased.
But a strong explosion occurred at Fuego on September 28th with the production of a huge pyroclastic flow caused by the collapse of the eruptive column. Video of the event are available online.
So that's it for this week. For the news, as usual, thanks to our sources, VolcanoDiscovery.com and the Smithsonian Global Volcanism Program for the knowledge they've given us.
It's time for the focus.
Yeah, let's get to it.
So, we are very happy to have you here with us.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.
So, first question. Can you introduce yourself? So, tell us your name, what you do, and briefly what you study.
Okay, so I'm Valentin Fréré d'Angeril. I've done my PhD in France, so at the Laboratoire Magma et Volcan, so in Clermont-Ferrand. Then I started my postdoc in 2019 in Geneva, so with Costanza Bonadonna. And the main subject I'm studying is basically determining what we call the eruptive source parameters of explosive eruption. So the aim is to determine in real time, like, the total mass of the erupted material, the grain size distribution of the ash and the tephra, and also trying to determine the plume height and so on, and mostly using remote sensing sensors. So during my PhD, I was using Doppler radars. And optical disdometers. So Doppler radars are like an active remote sensing system, which is basically measuring the quantity of some kind of a quantity of tephra in real time, and also the velocity of the material. And the disdometer is like a small device which is measuring in real time the size of the particles that are falling and the velocity as well. And those parameters can be used in real time to study the sedimentation of the particles. And the radar can be used to determine in real time as well the mass eruption rate during an explosive event such as at Etna. So the main object of my PhD and my postdoc was Mount Etna, but I've also worked at Stromboli, Sabankaya, and Sakurajima.
Very nice.
What are you currently working on? Which volcanoes are you currently
on? Okay, so I'm currently working on Etna, so still, yeah.
Well,
okay,
yes, Mama yeah, Etna.
I've started one postdoc in the framework of the Eurovolc project, which is a huge European project involving Italy, Iceland, France, and other countries. And now I'm hired in the framework of the new Tangi project, so which is more based on on developing new sensors measuring the gravity changes prior an eruption. And so the aim is to see whether we can, thanks to the gravimetric signal, either forecast an eruption or predict like what's going to happen during the eruption. So I'm not an expert yet in gravimetric signal, so I've been hired in this just to bring my knowledge in remote sensing and all the data sets I acquired during my PhD and my postdoc, and try to combine the gravimetric signals with, for example, the parameters measured by the radar at Etna. So
what is a gravimetric signal?
Okay, so basically You have some sensor that can measure the change in gravity inside the crust or below a volcano,
mm-hmm.
and those gravimetric signals can be produced when you have like a change in the magmatic chamber, such as the volume of the magma, the change in density in the rocks, and so on, and also when you have some fluids that are moving around the crust. So yeah. Cool. But I'm still studying this, yeah, so I'm still new in this domain. So I know a lot of people that could answer those questions, perhaps for another Volcano Watch podcast. But
sure,
yeah.
Sure.
So about wind direction, how far away from the crater can vary the size of the material that you would collect, and how you choose where to go to collect your samples.
Okay, so. So what you're saying that like when you have an explosive eruption, so you emit an ash plume basically. So I prefer the term tephra plume because, for example, at Etna you have inside those plumes you have ash, so all the particles below 2 millimeters, but you also have lapilli that can go up to several centimeters, and those particles are carried by the wind and the gas up to tens of kilometers from the vent. So at Etna, for example, we are very limited because we are on an island.
Mm.
So when the plume, like at Etna, mostly the main plume axis are towards the southeast or the northeast. And at Etna, we are limited by the coastline because obviously we cannot sample particles on the sea.
Have you ever thought about boat sampling? Like if it's while it's erupting, to go out on a boat?
No, not yet, but what we do usually is we try to do some, not drill, but stuff like that to try to see on the seafloor.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
cameras?
No, with collectors, I guess.
But yeah. On the seafloor, you don't have any problem about the thickness of the deposit you're going to see, because maybe the sea can, I don't know, somehow accumulate the material.
Yes, of course, and also, I mean, when the ash is falling on the sea, so then it can be rafted by the currents and so on. So then it's kind of tricky to know whether it comes from this particular eruption. So to answer your question in terms of sizes, so at Etna basically, so the people of INGV usually sample the tephra deposit from 10 kilometers from the vent up to the coastline. And normally the size at 10 kilometers can be several centimeters. And then up to in Catania, for example, you have particles of less than 1 centimeter, and usually it's around, that's a tricky question, but it depends on the eruption intensity, right? So it's around half a millimeter, I would say, something like that, but it can vary a lot. Then how we choose where we would sample or not a deposit. So obviously when you have a tephra plume, so ash is falling on the ground and you have a tephra fault deposit. So based on the observations or of the wind dispersal, so you go on the deposit and you sample on several locations, and the better the coverage of the deposit, the better the parameters you infer from the deposit analysis.
Cool.
Okay, well, last question for you. What is your best story from sampling?
What is the funniest thing or the most beautiful thing?
It's not sampling that was fun. It's when you're feeling the ash falling on you. So that's a very fun experience.
Does it feel like snow or different? I've never had this experience. Tell me
more. I mean, I could just take some sound and make it fall on you, and you will figure out.
Okay.
Yeah. So, my best story perhaps was at Sakurajima. So recently, we went at Sakurajima with a team in Geneva, first to sample with the disometer, the ash, and other people were studying the aggregation. So they had some electrical devices and so on to measure the aggregation, and Sudai Ho aggregates form. So also by measuring the electrical fields of those particles, trying to find out if the particles are charged. So the best story was like my first volcanic eruption at Sakurajima. So you hear this small boom because there are sometimes you can have shock waves during those volcanic eruptions. And when you have this sedimentation that is so intense that you can hear it coming on you.
Yeah.
And it remobilized as well the fine ash that was falling from prior eruptions. And so you have this whole cloud coming on you. And that was so funny. That was pretty funny.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Sorry. Now that you are here with us,
okay.
I want to ask another question. So you talk about volcanic eruption.
Yeah.
In our podcast, we pretty often talk about volcanic eruption. Can you explain to the listeners what is a volcanic eruption and what's the difference with other eruptions?
Okay, so just to be simple, like the better way to explain a volcanic eruption is like the champagne bottle. So you have basically a plug of degassed material that is in the vent. And if you increase the pressure below this plug, so usually at a certain point you reach a threshold, and then you can make this plug just explode. And so usually this is how you have volcanic eruption. So you increase the pressure below a plug and this plug explodes. And then at the surface, so the expression of volcanic eruption will be a lot of fine ash. So you will have an ash plume, but also huge blocks coming from this plug. So you can have, for the volcano listeners, so you have a lot of lytics usually coming from those eruptions. And you have a lot of fine ash as well. So these are very short eruptions as well. So what we call transient eruption. And so they are pretty spectacular. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for chatting with us.
Yeah.
And thanks for having invited me.
Yeah.
Okay, so, bye-bye.
Thanks, bye.